Thank you and welcome to Scripture on Creation. I'm Scott Kump.
And I'm Dr. Ben Scripture.
And for our program today, Dr. Scripture, you want to discuss the changes God made in the world after the Great Flood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've talked many times about changes in the earth due to the flood. In fact, not so long ago, you did a whole series on the hydroplate model and how it attempts to explain many of the geological features of Earth. Has some new information come to light related to that, or even to the canopy model, which you also think has several valid points which help explain the conditions on Earth today?
Well, Scott, I'm not aware of any new information to share about the scientific models creationists are working with to explain the geological features of Earth as a result of the flood and then, of course, all its aftermath. But what I want to discuss today are the changes God directly made to Earth, as well as things in it, and also changes in his relationship with man going forward after the flood.
Oh, so you mean things like allowing man to eat meat and so forth?
Yeah, that's certainly one of the changes God made. And there are actually several more that I sort of think we don't generally think about. And so one of the results of the program I hope to show our audience today is that God made a number of dramatic changes in connection with the global judgment of the flood that were not geological in nature.
Okay, well, I guess if we're going to study what changes God made after the flood, we need to go to the account in the Bible which records the events immediately after the inhabitants of the ark disembarked.
That's right. And those events are recorded in the latter part of Genesis chapter 8. And by the way, using that word inhabitants of the ark is correct, Scott. Hmm. When we get out of a car, even after a long drive, we don't really refer to those who were in the car as inhabitants. But no. Remember, Noah's family and all the creatures with them were on the ark for over a year.
Oh, that would really stink.
Yeah, in more ways than one. Although there was a vent, there was a window around the allow some airflow. But, you know, man, when I'm cooped up in the house for just one whole day, I get stir crazy.
Yeah.
Imagine being confined in a building, and the ark was like a three-story warehouse over a football field in length, but still being confined in a building.
And probably not the best smelling building.
Right, a somewhat smelly building for over a year. Now, Scott, do you know how we know they were in the ark for over a year?
Well, as I recall, the story gives a very detailed account of what happened at various stages of the flood.
Precisely. So let's start at the end of the flood itself, or more accurately, at the point everyone gets off the ark. That is recorded in Genesis 8, verse 14. It says this, "And in the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry." Now that does not mean February 27th. That date is relative to Noah's age. And since in Genesis 7:11 it says, quote, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened," end quote, we can do the math following that account forward to what we just read in Genesis 8:14. The calculation works out to show that the flood started 1 year and 10 days earlier. Hmm. And most scholars propose that the ancient world used a 360-day annual calendar. So 360 plus 10 is 370 days, over a full year by our reckoning.
Oh, wow.
Well, you can say that again, 370 days cooped up in that ark. Hmm. So the earth is now dry. And this is what God instructs Noah to do, starting at chapter 8, verse 15. "Then God spoke to Noah, saying, 'Go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing of all flesh that is with you, birds and animals and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, that they may breed abundantly on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth.' So Noah went out, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives with him. Every beast, every creeping thing, and every bird, everything that moves on the earth went out by their families from the ark." Now let's stop there for a moment, because that word families is interesting. It's the first time that word appears in the Bible, and its meaning is the same as we use the word today. Let's notice the next place where this word occurs. It's in Genesis chapter 10, verse 5, and it's speaking of the descendants of Japheth, one of Noah's sons. It says, quote, "From these, the coastlands of the nations were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, into their nations," unquote. So I think we should understand from this that with respect to some of the animals at least, they were already starting their families on the ark.
Oh, so there could have easily been hundreds of mice.
And rabbits, just to name a couple of varmints. So anyway, let's start reading again, starting at verse 20. "Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled the soothing aroma, and the Lord said to himself, 'I will never again curse the ground on account of man, for the intent of man's heart is evil from his youth. And I will never again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease.'" Now, Scott, did you notice something God says there that would amount to a change in the earth?
Well, if winter as we know it did not exist before the flood because of a global greenhouse effect, God said now there would be winter. Cold winter.
That's right. And the canopy model, as well as I think the hydroplate model, both propose that weather drastically changed after the flood. In other words, the polar ice caps, north and south both, were not there before the flood, and they formed as a result of the earth now being cold on the north and south pole, depending on what time of year it was. And so I would suggest that we should take notice that the current popular view, notwithstanding, cold and heat and summer and winter will continue on earth as long as God chooses to maintain the earth.
Good point.
We know someday he's going to destroy it. But until that time, the normal progress of seasons, cold and heat and so forth, will remain. Now, that does not mean that there aren't localized droughts and floods. Of course, we see those frequently. But the seasons and overall fluctuations in temperature through the year are not going to stop due to global warming or climate change or any other weather alert the environmental alarmists try and use to manipulate public sentiment, which they use to coerce people and governments into handing more and more control of the daily affairs of society over to them. And I believe that they have an agenda.
I
do not think that most of those scientists that are involved in this are even convinced of these things, but they understand the power available to them if they can convince everybody else these things are true. And notice another sad reality that won't change. Even after experiencing the judgment of the flood, God said, quote, "The intent of man's heart is evil from his youth," unquote. Pretty much the same thing God said way back in Genesis chapter 6 when he decided to bring the flood. But now he chooses to restrict himself from destroying all life as he just has done. And the outgrowth of that decision is the rainbow covenant, which we'll read about in chapter 9.
Now, Dr. Scripture, before we move on to chapter 9, I'd like to point out the fact that Noah sacrificed a number of what were called clean animals after they got off the ark. That would explain why God told them to take 7 of each of the clean animals on the ark, where only pairs of the other animals were taken.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there had to be more than just a breeding pair of sheep or doves. Otherwise, there would not have been a male and a female to continue the kind.
Well, that's a good observation, Scott. And I think another reason for additional clean animals was that Noah and his family would need them to quickly multiply as a food source, something that they apparently did not use as food before. But as we'll see, that clean, unclean distinction seems to be related to what was acceptable for sacrifice, not necessarily for food. So let's start reading now in Genesis chapter 9. "And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth.'" Well, let me stop there. Notice that's the same command he gave to Adam and Eve. But now we are going to see some of the changes God makes. Verse 2. And the fear of you and the terror of you shall be on every beast of the earth and on every bird of the sky, with everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are given. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant. So what this indicates is that before the flood, the beasts of the earth and the birds were not afraid of man. But notice there's an omission from that list of creatures God mentions here. He says, every beast of the earth and on every bird of the sky, with everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. What's missing, Scott?
Could it be livestock?
Exactly, the livestock. In other words, the domesticated animals. And that's because it would be very complicated if the cows and sheep and goats and so forth were terrified of man too. So it was just the wild animals. Or, you know, I suppose it was God who made them now wild, as we call them. But before this, imagine, they were not wild. They weren't afraid of us. I'd love to try and imagine what that would be like, being able to just go up to a tiger and pet him on the head, you know, having an eagle land right by you on the ground or on a branch and be able to stroke its beautiful feathers. But of course, it's just not like that now.
But it will be like that someday, won't it, in the millennium? I mean, we're told the wolf will be lie down with the lamb.
Yeah, you know, it really does appear, the way it describes, especially in Isaiah, that the millennium is going to return to pre-flood conditions. Let me read from Isaiah chapter 11, verse 6 and following. It says, "And the wolf will dwell with the lamb, and the leopard will lie down with the kid," it's talking about a goat or something, "and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little boy will lead them. Also the cow and the bear will graze. Their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox." Notice that a lion, which, you know, doesn't go around grazing like an ox, you know, will begin to eat grass again like an herbivore, which I think we should understand was how they were initially created. Verse 8 then of Isaiah 11, "And the nursing child will play by the hole of the cobra, and the weaned child will put his hand on the viper's den. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain." But unfortunately, it wasn't like that after God changed the wild animals after the flood. Now, that's not to say that the animals weren't harming man and each other before the flood. They probably were. Remember, the Bible makes it clear that all flesh had corrupted its way on the earth, not just man. But now the beasts of the earth and birds and sea animals will be afraid of man. And I suggest there was a very practical reason God made this change in the animals.
Well, Dr. Scripture, everyone's going to have to wait till our next program to hear what that practical reason is.
Oh, we're out of time?
Yes, we are.
Okay, well, we better conclude with a verse. Let's use this one. It's somewhat of a sad verse, Genesis 9:2, "And the fear of you and the terror of you shall be on every beast of the earth and on every bird of the sky, with everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are given." And that's not what I say. That's what Scripture says.